Hello, everyone. This is Greg, your host of Goddamn GameCube. Welcome to Season 3. If you enjoy listening to our show, consider subscribing to us on YouTube for exclusive video content. Thank you and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Beppy are your hosts today. And I'm very excited for this one. I'm very excited for this entire retrospective. We are talking about Silent Hill today, a franchise that is pretty near and dear to me. I've been playing it for a really long time. Some of our fans have been asking for this, so I hope you guys like it. And we are in the spirit of Halloween here, so this is very timely. Beppy, we're talking about Silent Hill 1 today. Why don't you take it?
That's right, we are. Yes, so I played this for the first time a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. I played it on because I believe the PS3 store they were claiming was going to shut down. So I grabbed it while I could. It's a great port. It has made the game hold up a lot better than it probably otherwise would. Did you play this when it came out?
No, I played this on a PlayStation 2 in high school.
Okay.
So, I mean, that was still 13 years ago.
Sure.
It was a while ago.
Did you play this one first or the second one first?
I believe I played Silent Hill 2 and then 1.
Okay. Yeah. I would say our current plan is that we're going to cover the main trilogy here. We may talk about the other games later. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
But I of the three that I have played so far, this was my favorite. Mm. I think, like a lot of my favorite games, the simplicity really serves it well.
Yep.
Gives it kind of like what would now be considered like an indie kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Very simple, but they keep adding things to the game, keeping you engaged, very entertaining. I did think, this is my suspicion when I started playing it, but I confirmed when I read about it that it was initially because it had a whatever engine they were using had a short draw distance. So they're using the fog to kind of obscure everything. It's kind of like the Superman 64 where you can't see anything.
Mm-hmm. But it's on purpose.
But someone realized it was kind of eerie.
Mm-hmm.
And so that became sort of the foundation of the game. And it's great. It's very, very, it's so funny that it's just like an aspect of weather that has defined like the entire mm-hmm. kind of franchise. I think it looks great in this game. I think it's kind of cool that this is, of the three, the only like snowy one.
Yeah.
And for its time, that's pretty cool because it kind of gives a little extra texture to the wind. If you have the snow particles mm-hmm. blowing back and forth. And I don't know. I just really like the atmosphere here. We were talking a little bit off mic about like sort of the origins for this series as well. Do you want to get into that a little
bit? Yeah. So this game was made by Team Silent, which is a part of Konami. I'm going to try to stay positive about Konami for this series of games because there's plenty of bad to say now.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the day, this game was made by Team Silent. What I found very interesting from researching this, it feels like to me, like Silent Hill and also Metal Gear Solid, those teams were made up of like the offshoots of the company,
mm-hmm.
like people who didn't fit in on another team. They were kind of thrown into this project that wasn't doing well. And it's kind of like almost like the failed musicians and movie directors that got into making these games,
yeah.
which I find very interesting. Also, what I find funny, it's not, well, in real life, it isn't funny, but I believe this setting was based on that town in Pennsylvania
mm-hmm.
that has been like burning for decades, like it was a mining town.
Yeah. I watched a documentary about this town and it's fascinating. I think it's on YouTube. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but what happened was in the 1950s, you know, they hit like a gas main or something, you know, like natural gas. Main and it caught fire, and they could have spent a very reasonable amount to fix it, and they didn't. So now it is completely, well, it's pretty uninhabitable because it's not only is it constantly on fire, it's also producing noxious gases.
Weren't there, am I wrong? Aren't there still like 7 or 8 people who still live there?
Or there, is that, there are. Yeah. And it's pretty interesting to see kind of how they live because, you know, it's like Silent Hill. It's all very like, you know, because of these gases coming up, it's very foggy, kind of like a strange atmosphere. And it makes you kind of wonder about the people who continue because, you know, obviously like the state or whatever tried to buy them out.
Yep, they won't move.
Because they can't, you know, support, you know, 8 people on this in this county or whatever. But there's a certain amount of holdouts that are still there. And kind of like the denizens of Silent Hill. You got a couple weirdos.
And I like to quote my friend Will, because Silent Hill does not take place in Pennsylvania. It takes place in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Will, reacting to that, he said, "Of course it takes place in Maine. I'm from Maine. Maine is terrifying."
It is.
Especially, I've started making this joke now in real life. When people tell me they're from Maine, I said, "Oh, are you from coastal Maine or are you from Silent Hill, Maine?" Because that's like the lakes region where there isn't much out there.
It's interesting because I feel like it could go a couple ways, like where it actually is. But no, it's so funny because the intro of this game reminded me a lot of The Mist, the Stephen King.
Yeah,
he's
sure.
from Maine. And like the pterodactyl kind of creatures look a lot like the, you know, stuff that's flying around in that movie. And I loved that in the beginning, it's like you're kind of just left to your own devices to explore the town. I really loved, like, especially because you get into some like kind of grindy stuff later on. But the parts where you're, you know, are in the daytime exploring the town and you have to find like the key in the doghouse that'll open the door to whatever house. And, you know, your map is very clearly marked, like what's a no-go and what, you know, what doors you've been through and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like, do you have any like particularly concrete memories of this?
Yeah. So I feel like the intro to the game is very iconic to gaming. I mean, I want to say this before I get into the game. The Silent Hill franchise is very highly regarded by horror fans, gamers, sort of your artistes or auteurs of gaming always put up Silent Hill as this very artsy sort of, you know, franchise that's held in high regard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the opening cutscene is very important, where you play as Harry, you're driving your car, and then you get into a car accident. And then you can't find Cheryl, your daughter. And that's what brings you into Silent Hill. So I think for me, I don't know if a game had done this beforehand. They must have. In the first 10 minutes, you have to get a game over. Remember that? Where, like, I believe you have to get killed by the monsters to continue the game.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I had forgotten this was a thing until I revisited. There's like the siren that goes off. It's like kind of like an air raid sound. Very unsettling. I've always like thought that sound was kind of scary. But it turns into like the nighttime and you get sort of hacked to death by these monsters. And it's like, is it a dream? You know, is it reality? Whatever. I love that. Very kind of engaging way to suck you in and be like, what the fuck is going on? I thought it was really interesting. So super early on, you get you meet Sybil, the police officer, and I think she's the one who gives you the radio.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And what I thought was so cool about this game is how the monsters are. There's a kind of a it handles like the supernatural in a very interesting way, and in a way that resonates with me very strongly, where you have like the monsters aren't just monsters, you know, they're kind of you know, some of them are sort of created from your id, like your people's imaginations. And there's kind of an air of interdimensionality to some of it a little bit. And what I loved is that they, for the most part in this game and then the next two, they do the same thing where you will get a significant amount of radio static whenever one is near, and that's kind of how they warn you that a monster's approaching because you can't really see, which is a great way to do it, number one. But number two, it's also it's kind of thought-provoking, where it's like it's kind of like EVPs when you see like people investigating like ghost hunters or whatever like that. And it's so interesting to me that they would be causing that kind of a disturbance in like giving off like electrical interference or something.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And what I like about it too, it's almost like a diegetic music where your character hears it.
Yeah.
Like your character hears, and well, in Silent Hill 2, it's the radio, in Silent Hill 1.
You have the radio, but you also have a very funny sound.
It's like a bell ringing or a phone ringing.
I kept hearing it as like a phone ringing, and it's really funny.
Yeah.
And it's like, it was also kind of unsettling because there's no like overworld music or anything like that. So that's all you're hearing whenever a monster is. It's so fucking weird.
Yep.
I think in that vein, I wanted to talk about, as opposed to the later games, I think the enemy palette is my favorite in this game. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just like, they're all very unique and the ecosystem kind of makes sense, and it makes sense what each of them are supposed to represent. Mm-hmm. And there's enough of them that you're not like getting bored. I think that's very important in horror games like this, is if you've seen something before, the less chance you're going to be scared by it the next time it comes around.
Sure.
And I think there's enough to kind of just keep you on your toes a little bit. I think the first one you're talking about was the little, like the ones that are supposed to be kids.
Yeah, little kids with the daggers or whatever.
And it's great because I think a lot of this, what this game succeeds at, is that you can clearly see what's going on. You can, you know, see the difference between you and the world and the creatures and stuff like that, but it's kind of nebulous what they actually are because they're so misshapen and strange. But I think those are supposed to represent like kids or like fear of kids or whatever.
It probably has to do with Cheryl being missing and your anxiety.
Yes, yeah, and they do that a lot in this series where something, you know, and
something represents something else.
Yeah, or an internal, you know, traumatic fear or something. I was just gonna go through a couple of the highlights. You remember like the ghosts?
Yeah.
That's really cool because it's just kind of an invisible shape that's slightly humanoid. Mm-hmm. I don't think I had seen something done like that at that time because this came out in 1999.
I believe you're right. Yeah. It's later than I thought.
Yeah. But at the time, like kind of leaving a lot more to your imagination. Mm-hmm. And this was at the time considered like one of the scariest games. Like it's still like, you know, it's time has aged it. It's kind of goofy now, but there's certain things like there later in the game, you encounter those like ape men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really kind of creepy the way they move. And they, I felt like the taste of what they found, presumably found scary, is exactly what I find scary or unsettling.
Well, I remember reading this where the goal of the game was for the, whether it was Konami or the development team, was they wanted to make a horror game that was relatable to to audiences in the United States.
Yeah.
We talked about this a little bit with our, one of our guests, Jeff Kramer from Deadly Premonition, where it's almost like a Japanese developer trying to like, put like their ideas of what American culture is or what American horror is like in, because Silent Hill does take place in Maine.
Yeah.
So I always find that interesting where like their take on like the American genre is different, you know, because they don't live here.
That's just what Maine looks like. There's like creatures flying horrifying. Around. Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with you. And I feel like in general, this game is like pretty well paced.
Yeah.
I was rarely bored a couple times near the end. Mm-hmm. It was kind of grindy, but I felt like going back to the enemy palette, they were doled out very kind of reasonably. Like they, you know, the surprises kept coming, and then sometimes you get like an upgraded enemy later that kind of takes you off guard and makes you a little bit more wary of them. It's pretty cool. So I would say that in all these games, I would say like that we'll call them like the dungeons, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably the low point of these games for me.
I think that's where you and I differ a little.
Okay.
Where if we're going to go back to 1998, 1999, 2000, 2001, like a survival horror game was that, where I feel like maybe you and I are debating like an archaic topic where, you know, if we're talking like it's a survival horror game, there are keys and puzzles and it's confusing and hard to navigate. That's Resident Evil 1 and 2. That's Silent Hill 1 and 2.
Well, I mean, yeah, but Resident Evil 1, the remake, did not come out that much longer after this game.
No, it's 2002,
Which is bonkers.
Crazy,
and everything
right?
is very clear. It's the map of the mansion is very easy to navigate and everything like that. I thought they... you kind of your mileage varies in terms of how well designed these levels are.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it starts out kind of rough in this game, and in my opinion, maybe it was a hardware issue, but I thought it only got worse in terms of how pleasant it was to look at and explore. It was really in a lot of places, like just in this game, it was tolerable, but I just found myself wanting to go back outside as soon as I could, because it was so much more interesting to me. I thought it kind of oscillates between normal Silent Hill and like the Hell World or other world.
The other world,
it's kind of, for me, it's like Silent Hill is scary, like by itself. I think it's creepy. It's and then you go to this place that's even like supposed to be even scarier. And I don't think the contrast was that, like, it's moving the needle like a little bit. I feel like it's, if you're going to present things, I mean, it was obviously to reuse the assets, but if you're, it has to be like an Ocarina of Time, past and future. Kind of thing,
like,
you know what
I think this is where I think you and I are in agreement here, but I think our paths differ a little.
Yeah.
I think like a weakness of Silent Hill 1, I don't want to talk about too much because it's going to have its own episode.
Yeah.
I think in Silent Hill 1, to me, it was way too obvious that the other world is the meat hooks and the grimy fences.
Sure.
And the real world is empty Silent Hill.
Yeah.
And I found empty Silent Hill to be scarier.
Yeah.
Like, it's too, like, it's too over the top.
Exactly.
In the first game. But it's the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to...
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that was a lot of why this game left such a strong impression on me, is how big a swing it took and how forgiving I was, because I heard that, you know, this is the first one, and then as it goes on, it becomes more polished, whatever. So I'm a little bit harder on those games. But this one, pretty much, I think, like, the last dungeon was really, like, kind of where I was like, all right, can we just get out of here?
The dungeon that's called Nowhere?
Exactly.
Yeah, where you just keep grinding through these grimy, fancy, otherworldly doors.
And I don't know.
I don't like that part
either.
They're
just reusing shit at that point.
I think they're trying to disorient you on purpose, but it's just not fun.
Yeah, for sure. I think if it had been... They do this a little more successfully in the second one, but if it was just more interesting to look at on a regular basis. I guess we could get into sort of the plot
a little bit. If we're talking Silent Hill straight up, none of the gameplay in any of these games is especially good.
Yeah.
I feel like if you don't talk about the narrative, like, what are we talking about?
Yeah,
so I feel like
you
might as well wrap it. So go ahead.
No, I just wanted to talk about, I liked the characters in this game a lot. I thought they all kind of contributed to the plot in interesting ways. Different things. I mean, because you kind of need, like, Sybil in the beginning. You just need, like, a normal person to talk to.
Yeah, exactly. I think you meet her after you wake up in the diner.
Yeah.
Right?
And very kind of, you need, like, at least one friend, because everything else is so fucking, like, terrifying and intimidating.
Yeah.
And what's the guy's name? Kaufman?
Dr. Kaufman.
Yeah. Interesting kind of, like, G-Man-esque character. Lisa, the nurse.
Yeah,
you kind of find out a little bit more about her as time goes on. She's kind of more than meets the eye. And what I thought was the antagonist was one of my favorite parts of this game. Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah, Dizzy Gillespie.
The famous, I thought she was great, and I was telling you that they ripped her off in Resident Evil 8.
Yeah, they did.
A creepy old lady, you can't beat it. It's just a great trope. And do you, in your own words, can you explain sort of what's going on here?
Yeah, so without getting into the ending quite yet, from what these games can get pretty obtuse. From what I sort of gathered from the first game, you know, you play as Harry, Cheryl is your daughter, you get into a car accident, and then you can't find her. And so you sort of chase her into Silent Hill, you're not really sure if it's a dream or not, you wake up in this diner, and Sybil's there, and she's a police officer, also kind of confused about what's happening. You run into Dr. Kaufman, but you can find out later that he's actually running a drug ring of some kind, and the characters in the game, you're not sure if, like, it's a nightmare and that's why no one is there, or why is this town deserted? And it kind of goes on from there. What I like about this game, it depends how far you want to go at this point, I don't know what other games did this at the time. There are different endings and different, there are some optional things to do that heavily affect the story, which I found interesting, that have to do with Kaufman and Sybil, and different characters can survive or not, and it affects the ending. And this game is early to do stuff like that. This was developed in the late 90s, which I thought was pretty cool. Depends where you want to go next with the story. Obviously, to our audience, we're going to spoil this.
Yeah. I mean, it's what?
It's 22 long? Years old, so exactly. Get ready for it.
Yeah. So, spoilers, skip ahead to the ending if you want to hear what's next or whatever, but... So basically the plot, I guess, of this game is that, she is trying to resurrect her daughter.
Dizzy Gillespie
is trying to resurrect her daughter using your child. And what you learn is that your child is actually, because, she's adopted.
Yep.
And this was a product of, the girl fleeing that kind of, her fate is to become the mother of God.
Yeah.
And who knows what that's gonna
look like. It gets a little
like.
Science fiction-y here.
A little like otherworldly, maybe spiritual fiction.
Yeah.
And it's very, I thought the imagery in this game was especially effective when it comes to that, because it's very much not like Christian hell.
No.
Like stereotypical. Like you're getting into like some deep cuts here of otherworldly kind of occult imagery and stuff like that. And I thought it was so refreshing, I guess, that's kind of, and it makes it even more, you know, sincere, because you're not expecting, you know, that level of it. But I think the different endings were probably the best executed, like the way that, you know, you just have to explore.
Yeah.
And if you interact with the right thing at the right time, you know, I was able to save one character, but not the other.
You're right.
It's pretty cool. A little esoteric. I wanted to talk about the puzzles really quickly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's one of the big aspects of the gameplay.
So I think a lot of them are great, and some of them can kind of just be brute forced.
Okay.
Do you remember the piano puzzle
at all? That's actually a pretty iconic puzzle from the game.
Yeah. I liked it a lot with the bird kind of metaphor.
It was so funny. I remember playing this. This is high school. This is so long ago. I remember I actually was stuck on that puzzle for a while, because the answer is the opposite.
Yeah.
Because it's
yeah.
the silent birds, and you have to click like the keys that have blood on them that don't play.
Right.
And that was, I mean, I found that very interesting. Now, I know in Silent Hill 2 and 3, there's a puzzle difficulty. Mm-hmm. Was there a puzzle difficulty in this game too? I don't think so.
I don't believe so.
No, I think you're right.
And that's, it's kind of a good way to intro the puzzles of this series, in that there's a lot of kind of figurative clues, some metaphors and certain things later on. It's like a certain degree of cultural knowledge that you kind of have to be familiar with to figure it out, which I thought was pretty cool. But in general, I thought they were fair. In this one, I think it's pretty, you know, like I said, there's a couple that are kind of just like, let's just get this done.
Yeah,
you know what
sure.
I mean? But I did like, you know, that aspect of the game a lot. I thought it was fun to explore and figure those out.
Well, that's most of the game, because I feel like it should be said that the combat in Silent Hill is not challenging.
No.
It's also not particularly good.
Yeah.
Like, it's very janky, like, very clunky. And, you know, you do get, you know, your varieties of melee weapons and guns and you know, your sort of, you get handgun, shotgun, rifle in this game.
Mm-hmm.
What I actually found interesting about this game, I don't know if you know this, if you miss one of the guns, it will actually give it to you later in a different spot.
Oh, really?
You actually can't miss them.
That's pretty cool.
So like, I think there's a point in the game, someone in the audience can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe if you miss the hunting rifle, it will appear for you later in the game right in front of you.
Oh.
Like, so you can't actually miss them. So the game wants you, I don't think the challenge of this game was not, the game was not meant to be challenging. They want you to get through the story and figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's on purpose.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's very kind of, I mean, of its time, and I was pretty forgiving of it for that reason, that you kind of just hold down whatever button and your character will auto-aim
and just lay waste.
But I wanted to mention that I thought the bosses were great in this game. I thought it was very, the first one is like very, very unsettling. It's that giant like lizard.
Yeah.
It's the split head or whatever. It's the way it's animated. The sound design is terrific. It's very just, I can't believe how successful at, you know, being otherworldly they were, because it doesn't look like anything I've seen in like any other game. And then they have that kind of like burning like effigy kind of in the middle of the room. It's just a very striking image.
Something else I wanted to bring up too, I think it's a, even though, you know, this game is not a combat focused game, they do something really cool. And this, I believe the series continued this for at least, I know it's in two. There's no HUD on the screen. Like, you know, there's nothing on the screen that tells you how much ammo you have. Your health is not displayed either. So I really like that in a game like this. It's one of these things, and we haven't discussed too many horror games on this show.
No,
maybe we haven't done any. Oh, we've done Resident Evil.
We started out with it.
Where I feel like getting you in the game and getting you immersed in the game, something as simple as having the heads-up display be nothing, I think is really important. Mm-hmm. What's also really cool is, like, if your character is injured, your heartbeat will start in the controller, which is really neat as well. And, you know, there are plenty of healing items, and you can always pause the game to kind of, you know, to heal yourself.
Open
and the game is not
inventory.
Challenging. But they do a good job. Like, not only do they have the fog, and it's a technical limitation, but it adds to the atmosphere. I think, like, them having the foresight, whether they copied it from Resident Evil 1 or not, we're not going to put a HUD on the screen because we want this to be pseudo-realistic, I think was really helpful.
Yeah, I think Resident Evil does a better job when you're in the menu illustrating what your health status is.
Yeah.
But other than that, I agree. It's kind of similar. There's, like, the combining items, et cetera, et cetera. I did... before we get off the combat altogether, I thought there's a lot of like melee weapons in these games, and it makes it like even more kind of grimy and like, because you have to like all these like this disgusting creature attacking you, you have to like beat it to death with something.
You know what I always found was interesting about these games? It's not interesting, it's just like weird.
Yeah,
you have to kick them when they're down or shoot them when they're down for them to stay down,
right?
Which I always thought was really weird.
Yeah.
You know, you've shot this thing 4, 5, 6 times, then you just boot it. Like, it's really odd.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
I think if you just let it get back up and then shoot it again, it'll
got it.
It'll die. But do you remember the like larva boss that turned into a moth?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like where the gun controls get a little iffy. Sybil is another boss at one point.
That was very interesting. We
kind
should
of a Meryl MGS moment.
We should talk about that. Mm-hmm. Where that's where I feel like this game was very obtuse, but it is very smart.
Yeah.
Where there is a way to save her. Like, you do not have to kill Sybil. If you have, I don't remember, I can't pronounce the word, but if you have that red liquid, you can throw it at her and you can actually save her rather than kill her.
That's on the merry-go-round.
Yeah, really creepy part too. You're just on a merry-go-round and like the boss is not very aggressive. She'll shoot you and then go sit down and play on the merry-go-round.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh my, it's like kind of, it's like very David Lynch-y
and
very strange.
Unsettling.
Very.
So you can, I mean, I wasn't able to, unfortunately, but I mean, cool that that's the way they handled it, I guess. And, I thought the final boss was terrific. Even though that is another, you kind of just like, you can't even keep it on screen while you aim your hunting rifle.
And
at
she just
it,
like shoots Thundaga at you or whatever from Final Fantasy.
But. Yeah. 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 Well, that's another thing. Like if you get the bad ending, you fight like a lesser version of whatever, but I fought the Incubus or whatever.
I think you're right. I don't remember.
It looks awesome. It's very kind of strange looking and gross looking. And I wanted to bring up, this is a great point, to bring up the music of these games.
Oh yeah, we should.
Because the track that plays during this boss, I mean, only one of several that's worth talking about, but it's such a strange, it's a lot of, it's very ahead of its time. I think we're gonna run one that is like for our background music this episode. It's pretty cool. It seems like something that would come out like nowadays. But that the track I was referring to with the final boss is very kind of a lot of like aggressive kind of feedback and strange. It feels very it makes you extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, so the composer is, forgive my pronunciation, it's Akira Yamaoka, mm-hmm. I believe is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from what, you know, I played this game a lot, but from sort of diving into his history with the series, he had a big, you know, industrial influence in terms of music. It's the on the first one and
well,
the second one.
It was like the era of Nine Inch Nails. And
yeah, exactly.
Marilyn
but
Manson,
what I found really interesting was he would write the music separately and send it to the team. He did not watch the game beforehand.
Yeah.
He and the team actually had arguments with him. Why does it sound like trash can?
They thought it was there was a glitch. They thought it was corrupted.
No, and it's
and
real.
He's like, no, it's on purpose.
And it's great. That's fascinating to me. Like, that's someone I would love to talk to.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, how did, like, we'll talk about this in Silent Hill 2 as well, but, like, these games are bizarre, where you have these, like, almost like alt-rock intro songs with these industrial trash can boss songs. Then you have your ethereal tracks. He's fascinating. His work, especially in the first two.
I love the innovation and kind of, like, taking the opportunity, because it feels like maybe another Demon's Souls situation where it's like, fuck it, let's see what happens.
Yeah, sure.
And I mean to great effect. It's like there is, especially of its time, nothing like that score.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fascinating. And I can't wait to talk about some of the stuff in the later games too.
Yeah, I think, like, if we're the game that has the biggest direct comparison has got to be the first Resident Evil game.
Sure.
And what I find very interesting about Resident Evil versus Silent Hill aesthetically, Resident Evil kind of buries itself, at least in, well, it still does, but it buried itself into the B movie thing.
Yeah.
Where the action, they wanted it to kind of be an action game where you're just blowing zombies' heads off. The music is like a little bit, has an epic feel to it, where with Silent Hill, they really tried to drill into you like the dread or like the the psychological horror. Like, Silent Hill is not necessarily a jump scare scary game.
No.
They just try to make you.
They do have those, but they don't like lean on them.
They just try to make you like anxiety ridden, or like you just have this sense of ugh. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what's so successful, especially with this first one, is that they never kind of like let their foot off the gas. In that sense, you feel it the entire time.
Yeah.
It's great. Lastly, but certainly not least, I did want to talk about the UFO ending.
Oh, well, the way this franchise does endings is really funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead.
So you have this, I believe, happens every time, but it's like a joke ending, and it's awesome. And it just, like, you know, you have like some tragic endings, some successful endings to this game, and you have a game where Harry just gets abducted by aliens, and it's all like stop motion, and it's like he just meets them and they take him away on their mothership, and I just wish like a normal game would just end like that.
What I think is so like interesting about Silent Hill, especially the first few, is that they do it carefully, where you can't get that ending the first time.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
But what I love about it is, like, I believe the way Silent Hill 1 ends is no matter what, you do complete the mission, but Harry just doesn't survive
or not.
Yeah. I think in the bad ending, you do solve it, but you don't survive the car accident. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like the game never happened.
Right.
Which is really strange.
Pretty cool.
But also, like, the UFO endings and, like, the dog endings and all the weird shit. What I think is funny about them is this game is so bizarre. It could have been an alien experiment. It's so fucking odd.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that I really liked about it, is that you were talking about how much is this real, you know. Like I mentioned, that lizard boss appears in like a child's like coloring book, like she drew it. So it's like it's coming out of her imagination, and it's never really delineated like what's real and what's not. And that's what's so cool about it is you know, and it's impressive too, because a lot of it is coming down to this is only maybe. Silent Hill is just the way it is because cruel people are there, and like it's all this like horrible stuff coming out of their imagination. It's pretty cool. I like it a lot.
I mean, like, I feel like the first one is different from the other ones, where I we're going to talk about them, but I feel like the first one really dug into, like, what did you call it? The spiritual sort of supernatural.
Yeah.
Where the other ones get more personal. Some of them, more into, like, Silent Hill 1 is really more about the ritual that kind of, or the sort of like the cultiness of that town.
Well, there's a lot of, it's mainly, I mean, think about the time, narratives weren't like huge. And it's very, you know, the gameplay, as we discussed, is very clunky.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the weight is on the imagery, which, and the art direction, which I think is very successful, and the atmosphere, and you know, the music. It all adds up to that experience, and it sets like such a high kind of watermark for the series. And it's very, you know, the characterization may not be as successful as the second one, but it's still like it does its job.
Sure.
You know, like, and gets you into it.
And I was going to say, like, another, I think, I feel like this is just me. I tend to get into the stories where you're the everyman.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you are just a dad.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, you're not, you know, you're not, like, it's like in Resident Evil 1, you're a bunch of special agents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're armed to the teeth and you can rip. Yeah. Like, in Silent Hill 1, you're just a dad who crashed his car and you're just kind of running around. I feel like it's kind of endearing.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, I'm not sure about the gameplay science of whether this is actually in the game. From what I was reading, your aiming is unsteady on purpose because you're not going to be good at shooting weapons.
Sure.
You can't really get your ass kicked and get you know, tossed around because, you know, you're just a vulnerable dude.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I played this, I believe I played the second one first, but when I played these two games, what stuck out to me is I feel like it started to build my opinion on what kind of stories I liked.
Yeah.
Because when I was in high school, I've always played a lot of video games, but I think with Silent Hill, it really started to form my, like, games that I would get attached to.
Sure.
And why. We'll talk about this on a later episode, but I find myself a little bit more attached to the second one because of how personal it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it started with this game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also like Silent Hill, because of the first one, it became this cultural thing too.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it spawned movies and spin-offs and people talk about how influential it was. So that really can't be understated.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Not, you know, we could definitely like take shots at the gameplay, how it's clunky. It's honestly kind of boring, but it really influenced, like, that was like the horror game of that decade that wasn't Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if Clock Tower and stuff like that came after or before. I don't really know. But that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And to me, if you manage your expectations, if you understand that it's dated, to me it held up very well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's exceptional. What would you give this game as a grade?
Are we grading games? Even though they're this old? I know it's a thing on this season that we're trying to do.
Let's say nowadays, like, what would you...
It's so interesting because I feel like you said, like, nowadays it would be like a weird indie game or like a successful indie game.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting to think about it that way because, like, if I played this game in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And when I played this, I just thought of it as like, oh, I like the second one. I'm going to play the first one. I know it's janky.
Yeah.
But if I had to give it a grade, that's hard. I think for me, it's probably like a B or a B plus, probably.
Yeah.
Where number one, it's the first one. It's going to have some problems. You can't really ride the first one of a franchise too hard.
Mm-hmm.
It influenced two decades of horror games, but it is janky. It's boring. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not fun to play. But I think the puzzles are clever. And even though maybe I'm attached to the story of the second one more, I still think it's a successful story.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to give it like an 8.
Yeah. Like a B. I think we're in alignment there.
Same thing. And so if you're like us, if you enjoy extreme dread,
yeah.
If you don't, then don't listen to any more of this series. Well, listen to it, but don't play the games.
Right.
Because they're going to make you shit your pants.
Yeah. I mean... Now, like, when it came to, like, before we, like, wrap this up, I don't know if you had any other thoughts or we could get into final thoughts.
Oh, we can get into final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, my, like, final thoughts are, like, was this, like, the first psychological horror game that came out ever? Because I'm trying to think, like, you had Resident Evil, you had Alone in the Dark, but I think this has to be the first game of this kind.
When did, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. When did that come out? That was like a 90s game.
No idea. Was that a PC game?
I think so.
I mean, the influences on this game were like Twin Peaks and David Lynch.
Sure.
But what thing about that is like, I don't consider this to be a very Lynchy game at all.
No.
It's really weird. But like, I feel like, you know, something like Deadly Premonition is obviously
because this isn't, there's very, very, the levity in this game is accidental.
Oh, sure.
There's nothing, there's no jokes, really.
Not really.
Nothing funny.
Nothing funny about it.
Only the phone ringing. That's all I got. But yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, my last thought too is I feel like this game is a good example of where I would love to see an actual remake of this game. Shattered Memories did come out, which was a reimagining.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think back on Silent Hill 1, I think about there's a lot of story, there's a lot of voiceover, and there's mm-hmm. but we're in the era where voiceover is really crappy, like all the time. And I feel like this is just one of those games where the only times it's funny, it's unintentionally funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wish that wasn't in it. Do you know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it made it more endearing to me, but if you were trying to, like, play it straight, I don't know, it was kind of like a mix of emotions where it was like, I was laughing, but I was also like,
eek.
Yeah, I think they could, honestly, all three benefit from, like, a remake.
Yeah, you gotta really, like, I think you gotta redo all the aesthetics.
Yeah.
Probably, like, the look. I mean, I don't want to redo the music. Like, just, you could even have it be what it is.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to do it for the first one for us. I mean, we are going to talk about the main trilogy, 2 and 3. I'm very excited for the next one.
Yeah, we kept this one a little shorter because the next one's going to be a doozy.
Yeah, there's a lot to say.
Yeah.
So thank you guys. Also, I know some of you were looking forward to this for a long time. So thank you for the suggestion. And this is a game series I've wanted to discuss for a while. So that is going to do it for Goddamn GameCube for this one. And we will see you guys next time.